Welcome to episode number 2 of the First Responder Wellness Podcast, the show where we talk about wellness, mental health, and leadership, and what it takes to have a wellness culture within your organization. My name is Conrad Weaver, and while I'm not a first responder, I've worked with first responders from all across the country for my documentary film, PTSD 911. And today on the show, we have Vance Rowe. After spending more than 20 years in law enforcement, Vance made a career move to the 911 Communications Center at his agency. Vance is also the founder of Yoga Rescue, and we'll learn more about that in my interview with him in just a minute. Hey, if you like this podcast and think others would too, please share this episode. And if you'd like to watch the video of this interview, check out our Patreon page where you'll be able to see all of the episodes on video. Plus, we'll have other amazing content that's not available anywhere else. Thank you for supporting the show. And now, here's my interview with Vance Rowe. Well, Vance Rowe, welcome to the First Responder Wellness Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, this is great. Thanks for having me. I am doing very well. We're on our family vacation right now, so I'm actually talking to you from the Outer Banks of North Carolina. Almost nobody's awake yet. So
they're late. Well, thank you for I appreciate you joining us on your vacation, taking time out of your family time to talk to us here on the show. I really appreciate that. And just want to also reiterate that I appreciate you and all you did for us for the PTSD 911 Coast to Coast tour and the finale there in Ocean City, Maryland a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I'm glad you guys had a successful tour, and I was certainly happy to be a small part of that. So thanks for letting me be
there. Well, it was a lot of fun to come into Ocean City, and man, I got to be on the radio and on a TV show and all those things. Thanks to you for making those things happen. Awesome. So tell me a little bit about how did you get your start in public safety?
Oh, wow. Okay. So we're going back into the Wayback Machine. My first experience in public safety is I'm at college. I just finished my first year, so I'm 19 years old, and my mom sees a newspaper article that the Ocean City Police Department is looking for cadets for the summer. So think about that, that she read a newspaper and, you know, like clip that out. we really went back in time there. So I applied, I got it. I was in fact essentially a meter maid for 2 summers, and I did a lot of traffic direction. And then when I turned 21, I became a seasonal police officer, still with Ocean City. I actually ended up doing my college internship there, and I had known Ocean City, just born and raised in Baltimore. Ocean City is a 3-hour trip for us. My grandparents had a condo they bought the year that I was born, and I spent a lot of summers on the Ocean City beach. So it probably shouldn't be a huge surprise that that's where I landed for my full-time career. But that's really how I got my start was, you know, I put my foot in the door very early on, and we actually still do that program here today. And I was involved in that. And a lot of my police career was recruiting, training, backgrounds, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So you spent, 20 some years in law enforcement?
22 years as a police officer and a corporal. And so that ended in middle of last year. And I went over, and I still work for the town of Ocean City, but now I work as a police and fire dispatcher. And that transition happened because of an on-duty injury. And it kind of led me down like this whole other path. You know, that's what kind of got me into, you know, what I'm sure we're going to talk about is, you know, my yoga stuff and things like that. But, I was kind of in this dark place. I got hurt. It made it worse. I think I better understand the mindset of our first responders, and I don't want anybody to be where I was. So that's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Right. So how did specifically law enforcement, how did that change you looking at back at those, you know, 22 years ago when you were a young cop and then, you know, spending those times in that career, how did that change you as a person?
Good question. I can tell you that it would make my fuse really short, just dealing with certain things and the amount of hours that I was working, the little bit of sleep that I was getting. I wasn't spending any time with anybody really outside of work. And I would find that I would start to snap at people for, I mean, like little insignificant things. You know, what I now understand what was happening to me. My views of people changed at times where like I became a little bit distrustful. And why are people talking to me? What do they want from me? I mean, that kind of stuff. Yeah. And that all was just because of my, you know, just because of the job that I was doing, not just the patrol job, but then doing my background job and doing my polygraph job. And I got to do a lot of different things in my police career, but I certainly left pieces of me behind. And I picked up some unwanted things that I didn't necessarily really want to have. So I think that's what started to affect me and kind of ended up in this storm is the way I really describe it. It was a number of different things that happened all at once and it felt like it's swirling around me. And I started to spiral at one point.
What was your introduction, even back in those early years, was there any introduction to mental health awareness?
I don't think we talked about it at all in the police academy. And when I went to the police academy, it was 2001, and the state of Maryland has X number of objectives that you have to reach. And I want to say that we had 900 or 1,000 hours of training. I don't specifically remember anything that had to do with mental health. I can tell you that the first really like eye-opening experience to me was in spring of 2016. So at this point, I'd been a cop for like 15 years. And I do the crisis intervention team training, which is all about dealing with folks that are in mental health crises. And the first day is all mental health first aid. And it was taught by Mark Junkerman, who is a retired lieutenant from the Harford County Sheriff's Office. And it's all about taking care of yourself and then like looking at your others and being able to take care of them. And I just kind of had this epiphany and I'm like, man, we don't do this. We are not taking care of our own. And I certainly wasn't taking care of myself at that point. I was hurting. I was drinking an incredible amount of booze at that point. I didn't really know what to do about it, but I knew I needed to do something. And it's not for still. So that was in 2016. It's not for three more years that my wife actually confronts me about drinking and some of the things that are going on in my life. And I start to kind of veer off into this other more like wellness, more peer support path. So I like being in this space now. I certainly like to help my brothers and sisters. Some are more open than others, but I'll be ready when they are.
Mm-hmm. So why is this, aside from your own health, why is it important to you to talk about mental health?
So my why, the thing that for me, the thing that's really close to my heart is, so us as cops, and then predominantly we're guys, so we push it down. Nobody talks about it. If we start to have a feeling, we just try to push it down into this deep, dark place, or maybe like drink it away, gamble it away, you know, name your unhealthy coping mechanism. People don't know what to do with that. It causes a tremendous amount of pain in their lives and they don't know how to stop it. And what they're doing is they're turning to suicide. Mm-hmm. And first responder suicide is enormous. In the police profession, especially, there is a suicide issue in all of the first responder worlds, but in police, it seems to be far, far higher. And I, you know, I, I'm sure it has to do with the fact that the availability of a weapon and things like that. But I work in an agency, or I worked in an agency that was actually affected by that. We had a police officer kill himself in 2004. It was actually 4 days after my wife and I got married. I will never forget that day, that when we got back from our honeymoon, I find out that my friend, a guy that, you know, I started as a summer cop with in 1998, Joe Kimball, had committed suicide while we were gone. And so as soon as we got back from our honeymoon, I packed a bag, went to Cumberland, and buried a friend. And that wasn't the first police funeral I've been to. You know, I've been to a number of them. It especially affects me. I mean, to this day, and here we are like almost 20 years later. And when I do things, you know, when I do my presentation, I talk about him because, you know, talking about him keeps his memory alive. And then there was a guy that I worked with when I worked for the city of Salisbury, that a 27-year veteran, his name was Aaron Hudson, everybody called him Bull. He took his life, it was now 5 years ago. I just don't want these people to hurt like this. And I know that all they're trying to do is escape that pain. And I'd love to find a better way to get that stress out. The way that I kind of describe it, and the way that it kind of was for me, is I use the analogy of a pressure cooker, that when you start to layer these things on top of one another, that cumulative effect, it just feels like it's going to blow. Well, if you don't lift the lid a little bit and let some of that steam out, it's going to explode. And it's going to come out at the absolute worst moment. And that's why folks have got to take care of themselves a little bit better. So that's that's really what I want to do. My small piece to that is maybe dealing with some mindfulness, maybe dealing with some yoga and things like that. But I'll certainly talk to anybody. I'll give them resources. And the one thing that I say constantly is, you don't have to talk to me. Maybe I'm not the one you want to talk to. However, I will get you in touch with someone. You know, I just don't want people to be hurt. And I certainly don't want them to take their own lives.
So back, I want to get into the yoga, obviously, in a little bit. But going back to when you had your epiphany, when you were sat in that class and you were like, okay, yeah, we haven't talked about this. And then when your wife said, hey, you need to get some help, what was like the first step you did? What was the first thing you did toward that journey of wellness for you?
So I had, at that point, in 2016, when I hear Mark Junkerman talk, I actually went back to my agency and I asked to be a part of the peer support team. And I was not only denied, but I was disciplined for talking to a lieutenant that wasn't specifically my lieutenant. And at that point, my police department actually disbanded their peer support team. At that point, what? I got really, really mad. And I understand, look, my depression, that's what I've been diagnosed with. It comes out as anger. And I just didn't understand that. I'm like, why would we disband that program? It was brought back a few years later, but I was not allowed to be a part of it, unfortunately. So anyway, I had been drinking, and I probably have had a drinking problem since college. You know, it was just acceptable. You know, we would get drunk, whatever, a couple nights a week. You know, getting out of college, going into law enforcement. Listen, the way that we blew off steam was, we're going to have a couple beers, we're going to have a couple shots, and, you know, on a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday night, because we all worked the weekends, that's just what we did. It became a problem in the fact that I could not stop. Once I started drinking, I couldn't drink enough, and I wasn't going to stop until I passed out. And by 2019, with everything that was kind of going on around me, which I have to get into that in a second, but I was blackout drunk 3 or 4 days a week. And You know, I was still going to work. Nobody knew anything was wrong with me. I mean, I might feel like garbage, but nobody.
You were able to recover enough to get back to the next shift.
Yeah, I was functional, but I was certainly hurting. And so one day, November 11th of 2019, we are on a staycation with a group of our friends. So there's like 10 of us that are staying at a house, and we're actually in Berlin. And I was so out of control that my wife took videos of me doing just dumb things. I had a little private dance party. Yeah, I was a mess. And the next day she's like, we got to talk about this because this is out of control. I'm tired of babysitting you. And that was the start. That was the first day. And that was, all right, well, I'm not going to drink today. And then I'm not going to drink this week. And then that has just compiled. And at this point, in November, it'll be 4 years since I drank. And in that time, my friend who is a Ocean City firefighter, his name's Eric Olson, has started a first responder recovery group. So there's a group of us that get together twice a month. And we just talk about our experiences. And it's all about having community, because I'm going to tell you that in my darkest times, I felt like I was all by myself. I'm like, nobody's going to understand this. Nobody's going to get it. And I felt like I was separated from everybody else. And the power of community is what kind of brought me back around. And that's what I found when I started practicing yoga. That's what I found in our recovery groups. That's what I found in these peer support groups. And that's why I'm a part of it. That's why I want to, do my piece.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the work that I've done over the past couple of films, actually working with the opioid crisis, I look at addiction. It's so much of a thing that separates people. It's so much of that isolation. It's that I'm alone. I'm the only one that's going through this. And I see that, with the first responders as well, and many of their issues that they face, that it's, I mean, even in the film, I think it's Nicole says, I felt I was all alone.
Yeah.
That's a thing that so many people feel.
One of the first things that I tell people when I know that they're struggling and I kind of reach out to try to help them is, you're not by yourself. You are not the only one that has ever been afflicted with this. I will be as involved or not involved as you want me to be. And I'm not trying to, preach it or anything like that. So one of the big problems with first responders, I can talk about my own. We're the fixers. We're the people that we're supposed to handle whatever crisis. So, when we feel like we're out of control, when we feel like we don't know what to do with it, and we don't know how to handle it. And I'm here to tell you that, look, what worked for me may not work for somebody else, but there's all these ways that you can maybe bring yourself back around, because you should be relatively close to the same person at retirement as you were when you started. And I just feel like we're seeing, these people that are coming out of their careers and they're just angry all the time. And they're in poor health, and they got bad hips, they got bad backs. And I just feel like there is something that agencies should do to be a part of helping their people get to the finish line. Mm-hmm. And not just when you sign up, they got you in the door. Ha, I got you. Mm-hmm. And then let's hope they make it. Or if they don't like it here, maybe they leave and maybe they go to another place. But I will tell you in my experience that, talking about this kind of things, being into the wellness space, that is not something that is widely appreciated.
I mean, doesn't it make sense to have healthy people to have a long career? Because the longer you work in a career, the better you get at that. Supposedly, I would agree right? With you. Mm-hmm. So if you have people that are dipping out, 15 years in, and now you got to hire someone to replace them. Now you're losing all that 15 years of experience.
That's true.
And so,
I'm going to tell you an interesting thing you see a lot of people maybe leave under the 5-year mark. When you get to about the 10-year mark, especially with having a pension at 20 or 25, they feel compelled to stay. And what that kind of does, and I'm going to tell you that I was right there. It feels like prison. It feels like I want to leave, but I can't. Before I got hurt, I was ready to, I had had the conversation with my wife. We were trying to figure out, how about that I could leave, but I was ready to leave law enforcement. I had had enough at that point.
Part of it, I mean, in today's culture doesn't help that at all.
No.
And this was the past number of years.
And I got to tell you that was at the very front edge of what it looks like now. It's a really hard time to be a police officer. It's a really hard time for these police agencies to be recruiting because I just, what are they selling now? How do you get people in the door to be like, yeah, you're going to work a lot of hours. You're not going to see your family. You're going to have people that are pretty nasty to you every day, all day. Or you could do something else.
Does it come down to how the mission is presented? And if you, because I know if you have a goal, if you have a mission, you know, if you're a part of the bigger picture and you see what this does to a person or an organization, a city, you're a part of a mission. And I think that can motivate people. Maybe there's a lack of messaging that, or even a lack of leadership that says, hey, you know, we are here to serve our community. Maybe it's some of the messaging that gets lost.
I mean, I'm going to tell you from the bottom of my heart, I think that you have to have leadership that buys in, that says this is okay, and we're going to pursue this. And listen, I can tell you what my feelings are. I can tell you why I think that it's not being accepted. I think part of it is that some of our leaders maybe have their own issues. And I think they're afraid to confront those things because I think they're going to have a really deep conversation when they turn that lens introspectively.
That's scary.
Maybe they're right. But so what you'll see is a lot of people that have kind of nasty attitudes is it has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with them, and they can't fix them, and they lash out. So that's incredibly unfortunate. And then the other part is maybe they are terrified that this problem is so widespread and they just can't get a grip on it. And so maybe we'll just ignore it and maybe it'll go away. And you and I both know it won't.
Right.
We need to help our people. And I think we have an obligation to help our people, especially because it's not like they're signing up to sit in an office for 40 hours a week.
Sure.
We put them in, you know, when we bring them on, we put them in harm's way. You know, when somebody calls the police, they don't call you to go to a birthday party. People call you on the absolute worst day of their life.
Yeah.
And then you have to fix it or you have to, you know, do what you can to solve their problem.
How do you get leaders to understand that, like what Chief Brian says in the film, he says, you know, I saw these things happening to our officers and I realized the job is doing this. So it becomes my obligation as a leader to fix that and to make that better. How do you get leaders to understand that?
Get him to talk to every leader in the nation. I think there's a couple here and there that are very pro mental health, pro employee, trying to make sure that their people get there. I just don't think that is a very popular.
It's not the norm
right now. It's not the norm. There's a better way to say it, and it's unfortunate. I don't know what it's going to take for that to be the norm. But you know, that's kind of where I come in. And, you know, I really appreciate being around when I got to hang out with you and we got to hang out with everybody else on the tour. When I've been to wellness seminars, I've actually said to a couple of people in my life that kind of recharges me, because I feel like when I go back home, I'm on this like island where like I think one way, but I'm surrounded by a lot of people that don't necessarily think the same way I do. And I'm not saying that they're wrong. I'm just saying I think other things are priorities. Mm-hmm. So that's what I work on.
Yeah. So let's talk about, how did you get into practicing yoga? I mean, what was that journey like, and why?
So I'll take you a little bit back in time. I've had a couple of major injuries in my police career. And the first time I had ever done yoga, it was a DVD from the Beachbody series. It was called P90X. Mm-hmm. And Tony Horton, a lot of people have heard of him.
Yeah, familiar
with
that.
That was the first yoga class. Right. That was the first yoga class I ever did. And it is hard. And that was in probably like 2009, 10, something like that. And I had experimented with it for like injury recovery, but I had never gone to a studio because, listen, you can't tell by just like looking at me on this little box, but I'm a 6'4", 270-pound guy. I'm not small. I stand out, certainly. Mm-hmm. And I was like, there is no way I'm going to be able to do yoga with these other people. Well, it's within a couple of days after my wife confronts me that I went to my first studio class. Mm. And I just had this immense feeling of community, you know, being around these people, that studio energy, it's contagious. And I was able to release some of these negative emotions. When I talk about, you know, like a pressure cooker, I was able to kind of raise the lid and let a little bit out. And I just walked out of there feeling so much better. Mm-hmm. Head was clear. And it's within 30 days of that first studio class that I actually told my wife, I'm like, I'm going to teach cops and firefighters and correctional officers, dispatchers. I want to teach first responders. And I knew at that time, I just, like I said, I know my own. I'm not going to get them to go to a studio with me. So I'm going to have to come to them. Whatever that means. And that, if that means like a firehouse, if that means like a hotel ballroom, I will teach wherever. So I bought a mess of mats. I went through my yoga teacher training program, and I've been teaching for the last 2 years, maybe 4 or 5 classes a week. Sometimes, you know, I teach the fun stuff. Like I teach kangaroo yoga occasionally. I teach regular studio classes. I'll sub for some of my friends.
Wait, I haven't heard kangaroo yoga. What is that? You hop around?
Well, let me say first, kangaroos are terrible at yoga. Anyway, so there is a place which it's crazy to me. In 20 minutes from my house in Frankfort, Delaware, there is a place called Barnhill Preserve, and they have kangaroos there. And a couple times a week, they actually host kangaroo yoga, where they bring in a yoga teacher, they have mats all over, and you can do, you do a yoga class and you have like 5 or 6 kangaroos around you, so you can pet them, you can hug them. They come get on the mat with you. Yeah. So I teach that occasionally. That's more, you know, for fun.
Sure.
But yeah, so I do some studio classes. I teach at a counseling office. I do at least one free first responder class a month. I'm trying to up that to 2. I just got to find the right location. And yeah, so
when you went to that first time you went to yoga and you went to the studio to do this, what did that do in your mind? I mean, I know what it does physically a little bit, but what does it do to your brain?
It slows it down for the first time. So When I talk, when I do like presentations and things like that, I talk about, you know, all these things that were going on around me. And when you go to a class, like the first thing that a teacher usually tells you is to become aware of your breath, to take these nice, deep, slow inhales and then a smooth, steady exhale. and you just kind of notice that and you just bring your awareness back to that, what happens to us when we are stressed out, when we are constantly tapped into our sympathetic nervous system, that fight or flight response? We start to breathe up here. We breathe up into our chest and we're not getting like real good breaths. So forcing yourself to take those great big belly breaths, it starts to clear your mind. And you're not trying to make your mind stop. Mm-hmm. You're just trying to slow it down. And you're just trying to notice certain things. And you start to notice where you're holding tension, you know, where you're holding stress. And mine is usually right here, right where that trap touches the neck. You know, I would hold my shoulders up like that constantly. And you just become aware of that kind of stuff. And you just work to like soften it. So that's the first part. You start to really ground down. And most yoga teachers will start like that. That's how I'll start before we start bringing in some gentle movement. And then here's the trick. You take that smooth, steady breath, deep on the way in, you know, smooth, steady on the way out. And you use that in every pose. So we get to the pose, we maybe deepen the pose, and then we concentrate on our breath. And then maybe we move to the next pose. And that's what starts to teach you that when you get to that point of a little bit of discomfort, that you can use your breath to actually, you're going to be fine.
Does that translate then into that stressful situation? You know, like today you're a 911 dispatcher. When you get that stressful call, does that translate into that moment then?
Oh, it sure does. I actually found that I am an incredibly more calm person. And that might be like, if I'm trying to like fix something where I would get really mad and I would maybe like throw the stuff down and be like, oh my God, I quit. I'm done. I just like consciously, you just start breathing and you're like, I got it. When I'm on a really stressful call, if I'm talking to somebody on the phone or if I'm talking to somebody on the headset now, it comes into my awareness like, oh, okay. All right. So slow down. That's what I've found. The real power in yoga is not being able to stand on your head, and it's not being able to like stand on foot or, you know, any of the other goofy things that I might cue or show or something like that. What the real power is being able to use your breath to slow down your mind and concentrate on like one singular thing. Then you take that off your mat. When you can start to use yoga in your real life, that's the power of it. It's not that 1 hour class. It's the other hours that you're not on your mat.
The 1 hour class is helping to train you for those other moments.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So that's where I found that, you know, I really enjoy it. I do it far more for the mental benefits than for the physical. I mean, I'm not going to say I don't get physical benefits from it, mm-hmm. but a typical yoga class, I can feel when I need a class. Mm-hmm. And that can usually, you know, I can do something online. I don't typically do my own. Like I want someone to tell me what to do. I actually went to a class already this morning. They had a free yoga class at this beautiful park in Corolla. And this lady taught this great class. So I'm literally just rolling out of that into this interview. but I can tell like my mind starts to get a little bit wonky. And that's when I know I need a class. So I teach typically 3 to 4 classes a week. Mm-hmm. And then I will usually do my own like 3 or 4 classes a week. Mm-hmm. Like that I'll pull my computer out and do
someone else's class.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's important. And that was actually told to me in yoga teacher training. And I will be very honest that there has been times where I've been teaching so much that I don't practice on my own. Mm-hmm. And I can tell a significant difference in how my body feels and how my mind processes things. So the whole idea is, you know, if you can slow down, start to slow down your mind, start to tap into your parasympathetic nervous system, your rest and digest, you are able to process what is coming in around you. You are able to process any of those unresolved traumas that maybe have occurred throughout your life. And it helps you to move forward. When you get stuck, and that happens an awful lot. And I didn't know that that's where I was. But I was stuck in this fight or flight, your sympathetic nervous system, and it couldn't shut off. So it was constantly firing, and my body constantly felt like it was under attack. So I was always like here, and it wasn't going to take much for me to just blow. Well, what yoga did for me is it brought me down here. So I can very, very better assess what's going on around me and make far more appropriate decisions than having my short fuse and being up here.
When you practice something on a regular basis, and I go back to my college years many years ago, we had a basketball player on our varsity team who, he was the biggest guy on the team, center, terrible free throw shooter. Until his junior year, I would see him up in the gym every single day. All he was doing was shooting free throws for like an hour. He went from like a 30% free throw shooter to an 80%+ free throw shooter. And that practice made him a much better free throw shooter, obviously. I think it's the same thing with this. When you practice something and you repeat it and you keep practicing it, then it becomes more of a natural part of who you are and what you do. Would you say that's true?
I agree. And while I think there's, I using both of those analogies, I think in the free throw world, because I wasn't a great free throw shooter either. And there's a part to that that's physical, that is literally like my two arms are going to throw that ball into the hoop. But then there's a mental component that I don't know that we address in sports. That was not a thing, really. Like when in all my football years or anything like that, I know they make sports psychologists now to talk to people about certain things, and they actually use a lot of the same components of mindfulness and yoga and meditation that I sometimes use now too. It's just kind of training your brain to function in a certain way and slowing those thoughts down. And you can do that, which is crazy as it sounds, you can do that with your breath. And one of the things you'll hear me say in a yoga class is when you start to control your breath, when you start to mindfully move with that, you can actually start to control your life.
Wow. What would you say to someone who is at the place where you were and they know they need to make a change, they know they need to do something to get them down this path to a better place? What's a great first step?
You don't have to take all the steps like day one. I think that I felt like I was almost underwater, that there were so many things and I didn't really know how to kind of pop my head back over the surface. Do one thing. So the great thing about that, and that one thing might be you reach out to a therapist. Maybe you go to your peer support person. Maybe you try meditation. Maybe you try yoga. Maybe you try Reiki. Any of these other things. And maybe you decide, I don't really like this. Okay, well, let's try something else. And the great thing about taking one step is it actually builds inertia. And you're going to say, okay, well, I took one step. Maybe I take two steps. And maybe that comes down to doing something else. For me, I had been in therapy for a while. I had certainly had anger issues. I had, and it was a lot of frustration. And a lot of it had to do with my workplace and the supervisor I was working for at the time. It's not for a couple years later that they actually put me on medicine. And I would have never told people about that when it was actually occurring. And I'm not saying anybody's got to tell anybody about it, but I'm saying I am happy to share that kind of stuff. Yes, I go to a therapist. Yes, I take medicine every day. Yeah, I do a lot of yoga, but there's other stuff too. And the reason that I do that is because I am not going to slide back to where I was, like ever. And if I can pull somebody else up out of that hole, that they feel like there's nothing I can do about it, I'm all by myself, I'm just here to tell you you're not. And if I'm the first person that they want to talk to, great. you know, whatever they tell me, confidential, of course, but I can get them resources. And if I don't know where they are, I will find them. And that's just kind of how I've approached life now. Mm.
So when you transitioned from law enforcement into communications, how did your stress change? And did you change anything in your daily practice to accommodate that?
Ooh, good question. There was a little bit of a learning curve. So that it was a different kind of stress, but like good stress. You know, I wanted to learn, so I would ask questions. I would try to get on. They put me on the radio pretty soon, just because I'd been on the other end of a police radio for so long that they were like, all right, well, we're going to try you as a dispatcher right off the bat. So that's kind of what I took to. But just learning a very different skill than what I was used to. So that was what I started to do. Now, what's nice is we are allowed to exercise while we're at work. So when I go to work, I go there for 12 hours. And so long as we have enough people to cover all of our consoles, which, I mean, most of the time we do, we can take some time and we can go work out. So literally I have a yoga mat kind of in a back office, and I pull a computer out and I go do a yoga practice. It's funny. On my shift, we call it my yoga studio, which I guess kind of is. So yeah, we all are given time that we can take care of, ourselves. And then my new boss, my director of emergency services, Joe Theobald, he was, part of the Q&A panel. He's my big boss. And then my immediate supervisor is a retired lieutenant. His name's Glenn McIntyre. And, I told them both when I was coming over from the police department into communications, I'm like, listen, I think the peer support thing is pretty important. And, I'd really like to be involved in whatever way you guys think. And they both looked at me and they were like, yeah, we don't have anything. And, wow. So you're in charge of it now. Wow. So they let me build a program. And, that was pretty great. And it, you know, doing things like that and going to certain events, like going down to Nashville to the FOP Wellness, you know, it let me meet, you know, awesome people like you that are doing amazing things too. And, you know, I just appreciate connecting with all of you. And I don't know where it's going to go from here. I love when people ask me, like, what's your business plan? I'm like, I don't really know. I'm just going to teach a yoga class here and there and hope I'm helping people.
So you were able to... So you were able to start a wellness program there within your comms division. What was the first thing you did for that?
First thing I did was write a policy. So I wrote our policy. I surveyed our entire dispatch center and asked if anybody else wanted to be involved. And there were two young ladies that both signed up. So once they signed up, I'm like, all right, well, now I got to get you training. So I got them training earlier this year, and now we are in the process. Right now we are tracking, you know, as people reach out to us, and not names or anything like that, just how many times we're being used. Mm-hmm. I don't have a specific, like, on Thursdays we do this or anything like that. This is still a work in progress, but this has only been a year. Like, we literally just passed a year that I've been there. So we've got our policy. We've got our team actually built, and I share articles with our dispatch center. I share peer meetings, recovery meetings, that kind of stuff. And just when people need, I just want people to know that there are folks that are right there with them at the next console that can help them. And what's funny, just my shift, and I don't know, I mean, there's three other shifts. We'll just kind of sit, turn all our chairs around if it's slow, and we just talk. And a lot of times that becomes a therapy session. Like, we didn't know that it was going to turn into that, but it's just been, it's been good. It's a very supportive environment, and it's been so different and so special for me to move over into there that they willingly took me on. And it's been good. It's been good. Mm-hmm.
So if you remember, if you remember in the film, we had several chiefs who talked about a culture of wellness. Is that something that you are trying to cultivate within your agency? Is that something that you guys have, or is that something that has been lacking that you would like to see developed, having this culture of wellness within your agency?
I think we are moving towards it in my new position. I think we're slow. With anything, there's a couple of things that I'd still like to do. I'd love to be able to have an app on their phone. I would love to, I've talked to my boss a couple of times about signing up with Lighthouse Wellness, and just a free version, just so that everybody has some contacts. They don't necessarily have to come to me. They just have it on their phone. So that is still a to be determined. We've had that conversation a couple of times. And I'm all ears. I'm not going to tell you that I know every answer, but if it's good for me and if it's good for, you know, the other people I work with, let's do it. The people that I'm working for, the bosses that I work for right now are far more open, and they understand that it's not just a job, it's a person. That, you know, there's a person behind that microphone that has real feelings. And, you know, sometimes we need to talk about those. And if that problem is too big for them, then we need to give them resources so that they can be okay. Because we didn't sign up for them to be here for a year. We signed up for them to be here for like 25 years. So let's make sure they all get to their retirement.
If there's one thing that you would encourage someone to, a resource that you'd encourage someone to go after or to look up or to find, what would that resource be?
All right. So depending on the person, if you feel like you are struggling in any way, shape, or form, I think therapy is a wonderful first step. I think chatting with anybody in your peer support team is a wonderful first step. And that, you know, the peer support is nice in the fact that while they're not therapists, they are people that are just like you, that can maybe direct you to more specific resources. Just because I don't know that there's one resource that I could say for police, fire, dispatch, corrections. I don't know that I have just one for all of them. But most people have some level of peer support. Go to those people. They know what they're doing. They can get you pointed in the right direction for resources. And if you don't know, I actually circulate a local and a national resource list, and I am happy to share with anybody. And I'm pretty confident that you'll put like contact info and stuff like that in there if people want to reach out to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll certainly help.
Absolutely. What so when you talk about an organization and their responsibility for the group, how much of mental health does it come down to the person as well to be responsible for themselves? I mean, if my bosses aren't doing the things that I think they should do for, you know, where's my responsibility to step up and to say, hey, I need to work on taking care of me first?
Yeah, I would say I think it's a really good point. And I think there's certainly the onus lies on both sides. I think it lies on the employer. I think it relies on the employee. And I don't know, sometimes the employee, you know, they feel like they're working so much, you know, they have a poor diet. And I don't know if they just don't feel like they're ready to take a step out of something that's maybe a little uncomfortable. But I would agree that I think some of it is going to rely on them. And that's really kind of where mine came from, that I kind of did my own thing didn't necessarily have any supervisor support or agency support. And I just, you know, I don't want other people to have to go through that. I'm still in the building process of trying to make sure that doesn't happen to someone else that's close to me or works with me. So again, I'm certainly willing to take on any ideas for any of them.
What is there anything that frustrates you about wellness and about first responder wellness? Is there anything that frustrates you?
What has frustrated me is just that almost like lack of interest in higher ups, that they don't see it as a problem. And we touched on this before. I'm not saying that you got to pay for gym memberships. I'm not saying that you got to do all these things for your people, but I mean, at least acknowledge that maybe working somebody 60 or 70 hours a week, and maybe, you know, disrupting their sleep the way we do and taking them away from their family, that maybe that's going to mess with them. And, you know, so I think there is a responsibility to both of them. Some people have good gym habits. Some people have good, you know, eating habits and things like that. I'm never going to eat perfect, but I'll certainly do some of the other things. But it does come back to the person too. If the agency's not going to do that. That's where I found some frustration in the fact that, hey, listen, this is a problem. Let's acknowledge it. Let's work on it. And, you know, people just say it's not a problem, or they don't respond to you. They don't talk to you about it. Mm-hmm. That's so frustrating for sure.
So finally, what gives you hope?
My hope, a lot of mine at this point is, for me, it's personal. That, you know, I want to make sure that I'm taking care of the people that are closest to me, and then that's going to radiate out into the world. What keeps me going is that people will come to me after they take a yoga class, and they'll be like, you know, just the message that you had in your class, or some of the things that you taught during your class, like, I feel like I use them in my daily life. And I had been in a bad place. I had never thought that I'd ever take a yoga class. And they just, you know, they come back to me. That's what keeps me going. That's where my hope is, that I'm like, all right, one day I'm going to be able to do this for police departments, fire departments, that they're going to be willing to build a wellness program that's going to maybe involve some mindfulness, some yoga. Here's hoping. Like I said, I don't really know what my business plan is at this point. I'm going to keep teaching classes. And, you know, I hope to reach out and get a hold of as many first responders as I can, but that's still to be determined. I'm still very young in my teaching career. I'm going to actually start an advanced teacher training in September. So like 6 weeks from now. And what that'll allow me to do is take somebody like me and be able to teach them how to teach yoga. Mm. So I will, once I finish my advanced teacher training, I will actually develop a curriculum, and I'll be able to teach somebody how to teach yoga. So they'll go through a 200-hour yoga teacher training. Mm-hmm. So that's my like long-term at this point. It's going to take me at least a year to finish my advanced teacher training, and then we'll go from there. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure I'll meet, and something will, you know, I don't know. It's not a straight path anymore. I kind of dip and weave all over different places. And at some point very soon, I just got a website, and at some point very, very soon, I'm going to have online content, because I realize that people can't always get to me on my schedule. Mm-hmm. So I want to make things available to them that they can do, I mean, maybe like 10 minutes. And I mean, you can do it in your patrol car. You can do it in the back of a firehouse. I mean, whatever. So that's coming. I just want to find reach, the ability to get a hold of as many people as I can.
Awesome. So what's the name of your website, and how can people get in touch with you?
Sure. So my yoga business is called Yoga Rescue. My website is yoga-rescue.com. Also on Facebook, Yoga Rescue, or Instagram, yoga.rescue. So yeah, well, I'd love to talk.
Yeah, I'll make sure that we post all those links in the comments for the show notes. So, well, anything else that's front of mind for you that you'd like to talk about before we sign off here?
We talked about it briefly, and I just want to say it again that a lot of different reasons why people get to like a struggling point. And you got to understand that early in my career, middle of my career, I was the guy that people came to fix a problem, like by supervisors, commanders. I was in a leadership position in the FOP. And then all of a sudden things started to change. And I was at a very low point. And I don't know that anybody around me would have known what was actually going on in my mind. My wife started to see it, certainly. And it took her, confronting me. But here's my point. You don't have to be alone. There are people that absolutely want to help you. I will certainly be the first one in line if you like. But just know that there are people that want to help you and don't want to see you down in the dumps, don't want to see you struggling. And I want to see everybody thrive after their career and not just survive it. And that's really kind of where I'm headed at this point.
Awesome. Well, Vance, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me today and for sharing your insights into this. And maybe one of these days I'll come down to Ocean City and I'll do a yoga class with you.
Ooh, all right. I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay. Please do. Please do. Because I'll need a reminder. Okay. And we're not that
far. Oh my God. We're going to do like a coast to coast yoga tour next.
There you go. that would be something. Bring your mats. Let's go.
That's right.
Yeah. Well,
that's right.
Well, thank you so much. Hey, thanks so much for listening to the show. I really appreciate it. Please leave a review and give it 5 stars if you think it's worth it. This helps others to discover this content and benefit from it as well. Until next time, be well, take care of yourself and those around you, and go out and do something good in the world.